And we're holding on page 76 in Chagiga, Ois Tes Zayin. So the Mishnayos here in the middle of this perek are talking about the more of the dinim of the Korban Chagiga and other korbanos that you have to bring on Yom Tov. Now, we know that you always have 7 days to bring the Yom Tov korbanos. When it comes to Pesach and Sukkos, actually have eight, because you have Shmini Atzeres as well. You have machloikas, this Shammah, this Hillel, whether you can bring them on Yom Tov. And the Gemara analyzes the machloikas. Are they arguing specifically about the oilus because you can't eat them? Are they arguing about the shlomim as well? Anyway, now, on the other hand, so with Pesach and Sukkos, you have Chol HaMoed that you can bring it according to everybody. But Shavuos, of course, doesn't have a Chol HaMoed, and in Eretz Yisrael, it's only the one day. So the Mishnah says that Tzeres Shachal Lias Be'erev Shabbos, if Shavuos comes out on Friday, Bishamai Mim Yom Tvoyach Achar Shabbos. So Bishamai says the day when they're going to Shecht and bring the Korbanos, the Olas Re'iyah and the Shamai Chagiga, is going to be after Shabbos on Sunday, because Bishamai holds you can't bring them on Friday since it's Yom Tov, and they hold you can't bring them on Yom Tov. You certainly can't bring them on Shabbos, even Beis Hillel agrees to that. You can't bring personal Korbanos on Shabbos. So therefore Bishamai says you have to push it off to Sunday. Or Bishamai says that's not necessary. You can bring them on Friday itself, which is Yom Tov. Now they do both agree. If Shavuos itself comes out on Shabbos, that then the Yom Tovayach is not going to be on Shabbos, which is Yom Tov itself, because again, even Bishamai agrees that you can't bring personal korbanos, your Olas Re'iyah, and your Shamai Chagiga on Shabbos. So therefore, they would agree that then it's on Sunday. And when that happens, continues the Mishnah, Ein Kohen Gadol Mislabish for Caleb, the Kohen Gadol will not wear his special clothes, on that day, on Sunday, when Shavuos was on Shabbos. So Rashi says what it means is we don't mean the eight clothes of his big de kahuna. What it means is, in other words, normally on a Yom Tov, when the Kohen Gadol is not doing the Avodah, he's going to wear Yom Tov Dikah clothes. But now he should make a point of not wearing Yom Tov Dikah clothes on that day, on Sunday, Yisrochag, for reasons that the mission is going to continue, Umatonin Behesped of Atinus, and on such a day you're allowed to make a stadium, and you're allowed to fast, even though normally the day after Yom Tov, you know, Yisrochag, normally you're not allowed to, Shaloy Lekayim, as Dibra Oimim, Akseres Achar Shabbos, in order that doesn't look like we're upholding the Tzrukim and Baitusim who claim that Shavuos is always on Sunday. So Mela, when Shavuos is on another day of the week, no problem. But when Shavuos is on Shabbos, and you're going to have the Yom Tivayach on Sunday, and normally, after all, it is Yisro Chag, and it's the day when everybody's bringing Korbanos, so people would still be wearing Yom Tov clothes, especially the Kohen Gadol, would be wearing Yom Tov Dikah clothing, and we wouldn't allow Hesped and Tainus, but here we do, in order to show that the Baitusim are wrong, and that day is not, in fact, Shavuos. Tosfos actually disagrees with Rashi and says we're not talking about the Kohen Gadol wearing nice Yom Tov Dikah clothing. We're talking about the Big Dei Kahuna. What it means is, now in principle, the Kohen Gadol can do the Avoida whenever he wants. Practically speaking, he would, aside from the fact that he has to do it on Yom Kippur, aside from that, typically the Kohen Gadol would do the Avoida on Yom Tov. So now we're saying, even though this is Yom Tovayach, nevertheless, that particular day, the Kohen Gadol should not wear his eight big de kahuna to do the Avodah, because again, then people are going to think that it's the Yom Tov, and people are going to think that the Baitusim are right, and that day is supposed to be Shavuos. So the Gemara says, a Raminu. So you're telling me then that there's no Yom Tovayach in that case, you're telling me that Beis Hillel is saying that when Shavuos is in the middle of the week or any other day except for Shabbos, then you don't have a Yom Tovayach after Shavuos because you can bring the Korbanos on Shavuos itself. But the Gemara says, Raminu, Maiso Mes Alexandroi or Alexa Balud. It happened that Alexandroi, or the Gersa in the printed Gemara is Alexa, passed away in Lud. Who this Alexa or Alexandroi was, we'll talk about in a minute. One thing we know for sure, it's definitely not Google's Alexa. Uvo Ko Yisrael V'Soshdoi. Everybody came, all the Jewish people came to make a hesped for him. V'Lohi Nichon Reb Taufen would not allow them to make a hesped, Mepneshi Yom Tov Shalat Seres Hoya, because it was Shavuos. So the Gemara says, Yom Tov Sakhadai, what do you mean? It was actually Yom Tov. E Yom Tov, Inuk Mika also. If it was Yom Tov, why would they be coming? They know in the first place you can't make a hesped on Yom Tov. And Bechlal, if a person passes away on Yom Tov, you can't even have Jews involved in burying him. It has to be that Goyim do the burial. So why would they even be gathering together in the first place for a hesped? So obviously we have to be talking about Ela Emi Yom Tavoyach Chaya. So we have to say it wasn't actually Shavuos, it was Yom Tavoyach. And yet, the Mishnah is saying that when Yom Tavoyach is on Sunday, then in fact you are allowed in Hesped B'tainis. So why is Reb Tarfon preventing them from doing that? And the answer is exactly that. Like Kasha, can be Yom Tov Shechalias for Shabbos, can be Yom Tov Shechalias Achar Shabbos. It depends whether Yom Tov, the Mishnah is talking about where Shavuos comes out on Shabbos. The story with Alexa, with his Hesped, was Shavuos, was on a different day of the week. So therefore, so Yom Tzvayach is not going to be on Sunday anyway. It's going to be some other day of the week. There's no problem that we have to forestall what the Baitusim are going to think, because then it's anyway a different day of the week. So therefore, yes, then we're going to have the usual rule that on Yom Tzvayach, that on the day we're bringing Korbanos, and anyway, it's Yisro Chag, we're not going to be making a Spadim, and that is why Reb Tarfon prevented them from doing it. There's a number of interesting things over here. The Tosfos Rid gives an explanation. First of all, the story happened after the Churban. Reb Tarfon lived through the Churban, but the story, Mefarshim explained, happened after the Churban. So in that case, there's no Korbanos being brought anyway, whether on Shavuos or on the day after it. Nevertheless, the Takana of the Chachamim still stayed intact. The vote would be then, the people thought that maybe in that case we should make a Hesped for him, because the Alexa was evidently an important person, and Reb Tarfon is telling them that no, the Takana still stays. Now the Tosfos Rid gives an explanation, even though, of course, as usual, the halacha would be like this Hillel. Nevertheless, practically speaking, because Shavuos is only one day, in practice, many people would end up bringing their korbanos the day after Shavuos. So even if there's not required, according to Beis Hillel, to be a Yom Tavoyach, on Yisro Chag, nevertheless, practically speaking, there would be. There's a number of sichas where the Rebbe addresses this whole matter of Yom Tavoyach and this little piece of Gemara over here, and discusses several angles on it. First of all, the Alter Rebbe explains in his Shulchan Aruch that even though technically the halacha is like Beis Hillel, nevertheless, most Jews, and even Beis Hillel themselves, most members of Beis Hillel, and most Jews along with them, ended up following Beis Shammai in that, and not bringing their korbanos on Yom Tov. So the Rebbe goes in detail in that sicha where exactly does Alter Rebbe get it from, and he explains that he gets it from a story in Masechta Beitza. Anyway, so the point would be then, so it's not like the Tosfos Rid is saying that they couldn't bring them on Yom Tov because there wasn't enough time, and therefore they're bringing them the next day. To begin with, most people would bring them the day after, and therefore, in practice, that day would be Yom Tavoyach, which is why now, even after the Churban, Reb Tarfon is telling them not to make the Hesped, even though this Alexa was a very important person. The Rebbe goes further in various sichas and discusses the deeper idea behind it. What's the importance of this point that they would have Yom Tavoyach after Shavuos? One point is, in other words, that since we know that Shavuos, we have to be especially happy to show, unlike with other Yom Tov, when we have Machorgas, whether it's Kulei Lavaya or Kulei Lachem, Shavuos, everybody agrees, Akol Moedim Ba'atzeres, to be in a Nami Lachem, that on Shavuos you have to have a Suda, you have to have Simchas Yom Tov with a Suda, because we have to show that we're happy to have received the Torah. So therefore, to that extent, they would show that happiness by continuing it into the following day and making a Yom Tavoyach after Shavuos, even though they weren't necessarily required to al pi halacha. This is also the idea why we have Yemei Tashlumin after Shavuos is based on that. And then there are different other points that the Rebbe makes in various sichas on this topic. One thing is, the Gemara also mentions in Shabbos, I think, that another reason why it's called Yom Tavoyach is because there's a spirit, there's like a Yetzahara Dika spirit, a spirit of Truma that was around at the time of Matan Torah, where if the Jewish people hadn't accepted the Torah, then it would have been Teveach, it would have Chas V'Shalom Shechted, and caused that the Jewish people, that would have been the end of them. So now instead that we did accept the Torah, then Fakev, Yom Tavoyach, become the day when we Shecht that Yetzahara, and therefore that's a day of greater Simcha, and therefore again, no Hespedim on that day. As far as who this Alexa was, there is an interesting idea that some historians want to say. There's a story that Josephus tells in his histories. Megillas Tainus tells the story a little differently. Megillas Tainus tells it about Yanai HaMelech. Josephus tells it about Hordus. Anyway, the gist of the story was that there were people that the gist of the story is that whichever king it was, King Yanai or Hordus, as the case may be, was very cruel to the Jewish people throughout his reign. And before he passed away, he figures he knows everybody's going to be happy when he dies. So he has important people arrested with instructions given to the jailers that as soon as they hear that he died, they should execute all these people. And that way, instead of them being happy that the cruel king has died, they're all going to be sad that their relatives and chachamim and whatever have been killed. Anyway, Josephus goes on to tell the story that a sister or a daughter, I don't remember which it was, of Hurdus and her husband, whose name was Alexa, went and countermanded what Hurdus had ordered. As soon as he died, they took off his, before everybody else was informed, they took off his ring, sent it to the jailers with instructions that Hurdus change his mind and said that everybody should be released, and only afterwards they publicized that he was dead. So that way all these people were saved. So some people want to say that was the Alexa of the story, and then you can understand why everybody's gathering to make a hesped for him. He had done a tremendous, amazing thing for the Jewish people. On the other hand, Toldos Tanoim Amoraim says it really doesn't work out chronologically. Hurdus died about 70 years before the Churban. You know, the story happened after the Churban. You'd really have to have that this Alexa lived a very, very unusually long life in order for that to work out. So it's not necessarily so likely. But it's who knows? Maybe it's possible. Okay. The last part of the Masechta switches gears from talking about the Korbanos of Yom Tov and starts talking about certain dinim that apply during the Shalosh Regalim that don't apply during the rest of the year in terms of Tumah V'Tahara. The basic idea is we know that throughout the year the Chachamim declared that Ame Oretz Abcheskas Tumah, because your typical Ame Oretz, as much as he tries to keep mitzvahs, as much as he knows how to, but he's not familiar with all the ins and outs of Tumah V'Tahara, and he may even be careless, he may be careless with some parts of it, and therefore the Chachamim declared him to be Tumah, to be on the safe side. On the other hand, as we're going to learn later on, when it comes to Shalosh Regalim, then the Chachamim waived a number of those rules and said that everybody is considered Tahar. So the last few, the end of the second parak and most of the third parak, And the Gemara on it deals with the details of those halachas. So in that connection, the Gemara mentions the point that when you have something that's supposed to stay tahor, you have to have your mind on it constantly. You can't have hetzah hadas, and if you do, then we consider it tamei misafik, because something tamei may have touched it, something or someone tamei may have touched it, and you don't realize. And the Gemara discusses that you may even have a situation where you have, for example, let's say you have a basket with a fork inside, with a fork or some kind of tool, or some kind of utensil like that inside the basket, and conceivably you could have that you're thinking about the basket and not thinking about the tool, and therefore the basket remains tahor and the tool, the utensil becomes tamei, or different scenarios like that. So the Gemara gives an example. A certain woman once came with a shayla to Rabbi Shmuel. She says, Rebbe, beged ze aragtiv b'tahara, I wove this garment, the tahara. Now, the din is that cloth is not mekabel tumah until you have at least 3x3 tefachim of it woven. So she's saying, when I put those threads on the loom, I didn't have to be careful that I'm tahor yet. But afterwards, by the time I got to the point that I've woven at least 3x3 etzvos, I made sure that I was tahor and that nobody tamei was involved in that nobody tamei was involved in weaving it. I didn't actually have in mind to guard it from tumah, but I know for a fact I'm the only one who was involved with weaving this cloth, and therefore doesn't that mean that it's tahor? So obviously this is a woman who's careful in the dinim of tumah v'tahara, but she wants to know, is it in fact considered tahor or maybe not? So Rabbi Shmuel started interrogating her and asking her all kinds of questions to ferret out the details. At one point she tells him, Rebbe, nida moshcha imi b'chevel. Actually, at one point during the weaving process, a nida pulled the rope with me, meaning you have a rope that's wound around. You have a loom where you weave cloth. Has part of the setup of a loom is you have two heavy rollers. One of them, the sheshi threads, are wound around them, and you spool them out as you're weaving the cloth. And the other one, you wind the finished cloth on it. So now you have those rollers are fairly heavy, and sometimes therefore you have a rope attached to them to be able to turn them. So now she says, so a nida helped pull the rope to turn that roller. Now, the problem with that is, therefore, the nida was not actually involved in weaving the cloth. Nevertheless, though, you have a nida and other tneim like her are metama with a special kind of tumah called tumas heset, meaning that if they cause something to move, even if they didn't touch it directly, then it becomes tameh. So in this case, by causing the roller to move, and therefore causing the cloth to move, the result is that the cloth becomes tameh, even though the nida didn't actually touch the cloth. Omer of Yerusha, so therefore, so the cloth is Tomei after all. So yeah, if she had been Shomer B'Kara, then she would have had in mind that kind of thing. Like this, she thought all she needs to do is to make sure that she herself is Tomei. It didn't occur to her this kind of thing. Omer of Yishmael, Tam Gdolim Divrei Chachamim. So Rabbi Yishmael says, look at that. How great are the words of the Chachamim? Shehoyu Omer Believer L'Shomer Tohar, where the Chachamim tell us the rule that if he has in mind to watch it, then it's Tohar. Ein Believer L'Shomer Tomei. And if he doesn't have in mind, then it's Tomei. Because here you see on the face of it, she was saying, how could it possibly be Tomei? And it turns out that after all, it was. So we see that we have to always, when the Chachamim say, when the Chachamim tell us a rule, then we should know, even if we don't always understand the reason for the rule, nevertheless, that's how it is, and sometimes you can even have a chance to see how it actually works out. Habboina also points out there's a lesson for it in general in Avoida that a person has to not only be careful with his actions, he has to be careful with his thoughts as well to make sure that he's always keeping an eye on his actions and making sure that nothing goes wrong, because here you have something that she didn't even realize would be a problem, and it turned out that it was. The issue of the Gemara goes on to tell another similar story to that of another woman who came with a shayla, where again the same thing. She didn't think that there could be any possibility that the thing became tame, and yet it turns out that unexpectedly it was. The next perek, Choym of a Kurdish perek Shlishi, so most of the following perek continues with the dinim of Tumah v'Tahara. A lot of the perek focuses on the differences in halacha between things that are used for Kurdish, meaning korbanos, versus Trumah. So you can have midrabbanan, you can have, for example, a keli, which is perfectly tahor, and you had in mind to tovel it and to make it tahor for truma, and nevertheless, it's still considered tomei as far as kodshim. You can't use it for kodshim unless you specially tovel it, having in mind that it's going to be used for kodshim. And you have a bunch of other rules that apply to midrabbanan. You have a bunch of other rules that apply midrabbanan to kodshim, but not to truma. So most of the perek deals with details of those dinim. So in the course of it, the Gemara says, so now it also mentions a din. Again, you have during the Sholosh Regalim, we trust Amei Aretz on their Tahara. And we'll talk about later on why that is. There's a couple of reasons that are given for that. But you also have a din that if an Amei Aretz comes even during the rest of the year. Now, if an Amei Aretz comes to us during the pressing season and says that I have this barrel of wine, which I made sure is tahor, and therefore you Kohen can drink truma from it, then fine, we can believe him only during the time when wine is being manufactured. But during the whole year, if he comes and says, I have this wine, I made sure to keep it tahor, and I want to use it for nisachim on the mizbeach, then we can believe him the whole year. So Tanya, Omer Rav Yosi, Mipnei Maha Kol Ne'amonim Al Taharas Yain V'Shemen Kol Yom Hashana. Why do we trust everybody, even Amei Aretz, about the Tahara of wine for Nesachim and oil for Menachos the whole year round? So Rav Yosi says, Kedei Shelo Yehei Kol Echad Ve'Echad, because you want to make sure, in other words, we don't want to completely exclude the Amei Aretz from participating in Jewish life and participating in korbanos. You don't want that every year he's going to go and build himself a bama. They had a big problem with that during the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, where even though the Beis Hamikdash was standing and they weren't allowed to bring korbanos everywhere else, nevertheless, we find throughout Sefer Melachim, Odom Mizabchim Akatrim Babamos, people kept on bringing korbanos on private mizbechas. So now the Chachamim had to make a takana to make sure that you don't want to have the same thing happen again. So if you tell the Amei Aretz, sorry, we can't accept your wine or oil, then he's going to say, well, you know what, then in that case, then I'll still start my own private Mizbeach, my own private Beis Hamikdash. I don't need to deal with you guys. We don't want that. The sort of Parah Adum Al Atzmai, similarly, by the same token, we trust Amei Aretz when it comes to things involving the Parah Adumah. If he comes and says, for example, that here I have a keli, which I want to use for Parah Adumah water, and I can tell you that I made sure to keep it tahor, then we can trust him for the same reason, because we don't want that people are going to go start making their own Parah Adumah. So the Gemara mentions Omer Papa Keman Mekablin and Haidna Sadusa Me'amaretz. Who do we follow? Now the Gemara mentions that this is a machlokas. Rav Yosi says this way. The Chachamim disagree on certain aspects of this. So the Papa points out Keman Mekablin and Haidna Sadusa Me'amaretz. Whom do we follow nowadays when we accept Eidus from Amei Aretz? As opposed to this Gemara in Pesachim that says that we don't, Keman k'Rab Yossi, that would be specifically like Rab Yossi. The Gemara establishes that Rab Yossi is concerned about the problem of Eva. Usually we talk about Eva in connection with relations between Jews and Goyim, but here we're talking about among Jews themselves. You don't want Eva between the Prushim, the people who are careful with details of mitzvahs, and the Amei Aretz, and therefore the Chachamim found it necessary to be makel on certain details. Which we learn from that. Akosef points out that, in general, that it means that a Manag Yisrael has to figure out, has to evaluate very carefully on where do we have room to be makel in order to make achdus between Jewish people and where not. Obviously, we can't just throw out Dinim of Torah for the sake of achdus, but on the other hand, we can have certain cases where there are chumras that we can set aside for the sake of achdus, and this is an example of that. Tosfos actually points out that not necessarily would the Chachamim even disagree. First of all, Tosfos actually says that since the Gemara is implying that we hold like Rabbi Yossi, then here's another nafkamina of it as well. The Gemara tells us in Brochas that you can't have an Amah Aretz be a member of a Mezuman. But nowadays we do. We have no problem having Amah Aretz or people who are not yet, who are still working on Torah and coming close to Torah and Mitzvahs and joining them in a Mezuman. So Tosfos points out same thing, same way as we're saying that we can accept their Eidos, we can also join them in a Mezuman. Tosfos also points out, after all, who would it be who would not want to do that, who would not want to have an Amah Aretz join his Mezuman, would be a Talmid Chacham. Well, we shouldn't hold ourselves that we're of the caliber of Talmid Chachamim like that to be able to say, I'm too great to have an Amah Aretz joining me. So you have that as well. With that said, there are Rishonim, by the way, who disagree with Rashi and say the Gemara doesn't mean that the Chachamim would necessarily disagree and say that you can't accept testimony from an Amah Aretz. The Gemara is mentioning Rabbi Yossi because he's the one who makes this point, but maybe in that particular detail the Chachamim would agree. And furthermore, Rishonim say there may be different levels of Amah Aretz in that regard. The Gemara in Pesachim, when it says there's a Gemara in Pesachim on Daf Mem Tes that talk about a whole bunch of negative things against Amah Aretz, and one of the things it mentions over there is you can't accept Eidos from them, that they may be more that kind of Amah Aretz who are actually hostile to the Chachamim, of the kind that we find in that Gemara over there, for example, where Rabbi Akiva says, when I was an Amah Aretz, I used to say, if only I had a Talmid Chacham and I would bite him like a donkey. As opposed to the general run of Amei Aretz, they're not hostile to the Chachamim, they don't know better, so to begin with, they may not be the ones who are included in that din of not accepting Eidos from them in the first place. In any case, though, the point is that we do. We have them part of a Mezuman, we accept Eidos from them, and so on and so forth, because, again, we don't want that people are going to start their own streams of Yiddishkeit or something, chas v'shalom. Okay. Further in connection with all these dinim of Tumah v'Tahara, the Gemara mentions a machlokes b'shama b'shilo on the following topic. Now, we know that there are things that you're able to tovel in a mikveh and make them, and if they become tamei mess, you're able to sprinkle them with part adruma water and they become tahor. And then you have things which you can't. In particular, we know foods, you can't make tahor in a mikveh with the exception of water. You can do ashaka. And as far as kalim, you can't tovel earthenware kalim. The only thing that you can do if they're tamei is break them or use them when you're tamei. So the Gemara discusses the point that, given that most of the time we consider that Amei Aretz and anything that they own is Tomei because of the Sofet, because they don't know how to keep the Dinim properly, then therefore, so you would have, so Bishamai says, we would say that anything from an Amah Aretz, anything that you would want to borrow from an Amah Aretz is B'chezkas Tomei with the exception of food and Klei Cheres. And the Gemara discusses in that connection, you can even have, therefore, that the, now you also have a rule that a kavi that's tumah cannot prevent tumah from spreading from one place to another. So say, for example, you have examples in the Mishnayos Ahalos, where you have, say, for example, a two-story house, and you have a skylight or a hatch to go up from the ground floor to the second floor. You'll have a ladder over there, and you'll go up through a hole in the ceiling. So suppose that hole is blocked with something that's not makabel truma, then if truma, like a kazayis or a mess or whatever, is brought in to the downstairs, then anything upstairs will remain tummy. But if you have what's blocking the hole, and what's blocking the hatch is something that's makabel truma, then the truma is going to spread to upstairs as well. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Omer Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Yeshua says in the discussion with Beis Shammai about the details of this din, he says, Boishni mi divreichem Beis Shammai. I'm embarrassed at your words, Beis Shammai. How could you possibly say what you're saying? Efshu isha losha v'chola. He says, imagine like this. So you're telling me that we don't consider the that we don't consider the clay cheres that belong to an amaoret to be tummy. But we do consider anything else that we get from an amaoret to be tummy. So imagine, for example, that we have, says Rabbi Yeshua, imagine that you have a two-story house like that, and you have a kli cheres that belongs to an amaoret blocking the skylight. Now what happens is, upstairs, you have, for example, a woman kneading dough over there. You're going to tell me that the tray that she's kneading the dough in is going to become tummy, and the dough itself is going to remain to her. And she herself is going to become Tomei, because we're going to say the Tumah is going to travel through the hatch over there as though there wasn't anything blocking it, because again, what's blocking it is a Kevi that's Tomei, but you're telling me that nevertheless, the tray that she's using to make the dough is going to be Tomei. What's the logic? So one of the Talmidim of Beis Shammai joined up to go and talk it over with Rabbi Yeshua. Omalei tells him, Oy malacha taimes shabbos shammai. Can I tell you this Shammai's reason? You're saying that you're embarrassed of them, that it sounds like they're being wildly inconsistent. I'll explain it to you. Omalei amar. So Rabbi Yeshua says, go ahead, say. Omalei. So the Talmud starts by establishing some basic fact. Kalev shal amaoretz tomei or tahor. Is a kevi that belongs to an amaoretz, basically, is it by default tomei or tahor? Omalei Tomei, Rabbi Yeshua says, of course, a keli that we get from an Amaretz is b'cheskas Tomei, because again, we don't know that the Amaretz was careful with the dinim of Tumah v'Tahara. Well, continues the Talmud, v'imata omalei Tomei, but if you tell him that his keli is Tomei, and it's a kli cheres, which can never be terrible than a mikveh to become tahor, klum mashdiach halacha, is he gonna pay any attention to you? So no. So therefore, we have no choice but to say that his clay cheres are tahor, because anyway, if we try to tell him they're tamei, he's not going to listen to us anyway, because he's going to say, what do you want me to break my kelim? I don't think they became tamei. In fact, the loyoi, not only that, elashimata oimalei tamei, if you insist and you tell him, wait, your kelim are tamei, oimaloch, then he's going to get hostile. He's going to say, on the contrary, shali tahor b'shochal tamei, mine are tahor, yours may be tamei. So therefore, Sabes Shammai therefore is saying that foods and drinks and clay cheres that belong to an amaoretz we're going to assume that they're tahor, because since there's no way to toivel them in a mikveh, then therefore if we tell the amaoretz they're tameh, then he's not going to listen to us anyway, and it's just going to cause hostility between him and us. As opposed to all other kalim, we can tell the amaoretz that your wooden kalim or metal kalim or whatever are tameh, and he'll say, okay, fine, so I'll toivel them in the mikveh, big deal. So, and Shabbos Shammai. So therefore, so the Talmud explains to Rabbi Yeshua, that's the reason behind Beis Shammai's reason. So now you understand, he says, that when it comes to your scenario with a woman upstairs on the second floor kneading dough, why is it that some things over there are going to be tamei and some are going to be tahor? Because we have to distinguish between the clay cheres and the foods and everything else, based on this logic. Miyad holach Rabbi Yeshua v'nishtashteach al-kiveh Beis Shammai. So Rabbi Yeshua right away went and prostrated himself to ask Mechila on the graves of Beis Shammai. Now this had happened long after, primarily Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel operated during the times of Hillel and Shammai themselves, and a little bit afterwards. Rabbi Yeshua is already a generation or two later, because he's a Talmud of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, who was one of the Talmudim of Hillel and Shammai. Actually. So by now, the original Chachamim of Beis Shammai had long since passed away. This Talmud of Beis Shammai was one of the later members of that group who was still alive and told Rabbi Yeshua, what's going on over here? So now Rabbi Yeshua went to ask Mechila by the Chachamim of Beis Shammai who had long since passed away. Omar, he says, Nanesi lachan atzmes Beis Shammai. I've spoken too much against you, Nanesi meloshen aniyah, like I've spoken up against you inappropriately, bones of Beis Shammai. Umas strumas shalachem kach. Madoch, your obscure halachas, when you say something like this, where it's so obscure to understand, why should the halacha be this way? Why are you being so inconsistent as far as things that belong to an amaoretz? And it turns out there's a very clear and logical reason behind it. Mufuroshas, halachas kama vakama, how much more so the ones where it's much more clear the reason behind it that we should respect it. Yes, the halacha is not necessarily going to be like the Shammai in most cases, but nevertheless, we still have to respect it as a legitimate opinion in Torah, and we should never say on it, an expression like that, I'm embarrassed of your words. Omru, so they said he to do tshuva for speaking wrongly against Beis Shammai. Kol yom of hushchuru shinim b'pnei tani Yosef. His teeth became black from all the fasts that he undertook to as extra tshuva for the way he had spoken against Beis Shammai. Altered Rebbe brings the Sinigeres HaTshuva as an example of one of the Chachamim who did an unusual number of fasts for something that would barely be considered an Aveira at all, but they wanted, like as an extra thing, as an extra, almost like the equivalent of a Korban Ola, to get back in Hashem's good favor, and therefore, and then similarly, you have in the various Sfarim from the Mekubalim among the early Achronim, like Reish HaSchachma and whatever, that talk about various fasts for various kinds of Averus and Midas Rois, which the Alter Rebbe goes on to discuss in detail over there in Perek Beis and Gimel of the Geres HaTshuva. So this is one example of that. And the sugya goes on at some length about Tumah v'Tahara, and the Gemara also mentions the point that you were able to borrow Kalim from an Am Haaretz. And again, the idea is that a chover, if he's going to borrow most Kalim from an Am Haaretz, he has to assume that he's Tomei and Toivol then. But again, if he's going to borrow, again, as far as Klei Cheres and foods, he's not going to borrow them in the first place from an Am Haaretz, because he knows if they're Tomei, there's no way to make them Tahar. And he doesn't want to get involved with that. But on the other hand, we can't tell the Am Haaretz they are Tomei, because again, like we said, he's going to react badly. And therefore, so the halacha ends up being like that. In fact, Rabbi Yeshua in his times was the representative of Beis Hillel. Therefore, this is one of the things, once we're saying over here that Rabbi Yeshua accepted Beis Shammai's Svara, this is one of the things mentioned in Mishnayos Adius. This is one of those cases where Beis Hillel ended up abandoning their opinion and accepting that of Beis Shammai. And therefore, the halacha is like Beis Shammai. And that's how it is over here. So this is one of those cases where the halacha is like Beis Shammai, because Beis Hillel, in the person of Rabbi Yeshua, ended up conceding to them. By the way, as far as the Yom Tvoyach before, where, as we said before, the Alter Rebbe explains that even though technically the halacha, as far as Yom Tvoyach, is like Beis Hillel, in practice most people, even most of Beis Hillel themselves, follow Beis Shammai, in one of the sichas about it, the Rebbe points out that this was a me'ein of La'asid Lava. In the future, we know the halacha in general is going to be like Beis Shammai. So now we have, in connection with Shavuos, the day that the Torah was given, then we have a foretaste of that, where the halacha is, where even though technically the halacha is like Beis Hillel, nevertheless most people follow Beis Shammai. So we'll continue and we'll finish up the sechta tomorrow, Beth Hashem. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Bof Elul. We have to know that Rebbe talked about in one of the earliest letters before he had even assumed the Nasir, so this was Pesach Sheni Tavshin Yud in 1950, a few months after the Friedrich Rebbe's Astalkos, but before he himself had accepted the Nasir, that Rebbe was writing in a letter. We have to know very clearly that every single pu'ula, every single action, and every single effort that we do to spread out, to do our Chotzos HaMayonis, to spread out the wellsprings of Chassidus further out, that any such thing illuminates the darkness of Golos and brings much closer the coming and the revelation of Mashiach. We don't even have any words enough to describe how hard it is to be even a moment extra in Golos, and how precious it would be to have a single extra moment of Gilui Mashiach. So in other words, that kind of thing should impel us to put in all the effort possible for our Chotzos HaMayonis, knowing that it brings Mashiach even one moment closer. Alright, continuing on Dinyim of what happens if a fire breaks out on Shabbos. So we said the Chachamim imposed restrictions what you can save on Shabbos to prevent you from, so you don't forget altogether that it's Shabbos. So now, we said that when it comes to food and dishes and things like that, you're allowed to save whatever you're going to need for the number of meals that are remaining for Shabbos. So if it breaks out Friday night before the meal, and you can save three meals worth of food in the morning too, etc. You can also announce to other people, come and save for yourselves. And everybody else can then save as much food as he would be able to eat on that Shabbos for the respective meals. Or again, he can take one big keli that contains a lot of food in it. And the people who take that food are then allowed to keep it, because at this point, the owner made it hefker. So if the person who saved the food is a Yorei Shamayim, and he wants to, and he's going to know, look, you wouldn't mafka this food willingly, you only did it under duress because there's a fire going on over here, so he wants to return the food to you, so that's fine. He is allowed then, so then when he returns the food, he is allowed after Shabbos to ask for payment for the effort that he put into saving it. That's not considered Schar Shabbos because technically it would have all belonged to him anyway, and it's only Midas Chassidus. The Gemara actually explains we're talking about a guy who, on the one hand, he's willing to be a Yoreh Shemayim insofar as returning the food, and but on the other hand, he does want a few bucks for it. So therefore, some Midas Chassidus would be even that would be beyond Midas Chassidus would be not to take Schar for that, even though it's technically not Schar Shabbos, because when you have even the tiniest traces of an Aveda, then a Chassid is going to stay away from any such thing. Okay.
Good.
Yeah. Come out of